charismatic, passionate, has integrity, humble, servant, inspiring, faithful, persevering, positive, flexible, driven.
This is not about theory. This is about application. This is what you're trying to be. This is who we are that call ourselves leaders.
I'm Dave Ramsey, and you're listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast.
Well, welcome, everyone. This is Chris Hogan. I am back with you. Today, it is all about you. But listen, I've got a friend with me today, John Felkins. John, how are you?
Great, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, we told you all that we were going to take a day and we were going to spend time answering your questions. So it's all about our listeners, John.
Absolutely. This is going to be fun.
We've reached out to you. We asked you to send us questions. You fired them in. You sent them in from Twitter, from Facebook, from the Entree Leadership discussion boards. We have a stack of questions here.
We filtered out all the hard ones, though, right, Chris? We just keep any easy questions?
Well, we tried to, but Don wouldn't let us. So Don threw them back in. Don Haney, our rock star producer, we have them here. We are going to walk through these things and talk to you and give you straight answers. We're not going to tiptoe around. We're not going to nibble on little things. We're going to shoot you straight. And I'm going to tell you this. If we don't know, we're going to tell you we don't know or we have an opinion. But the deal is that as Entree leaders, we're trying to be effective. So we're going to dive right in. The first one came in from Twitter. And John, I'm going to throw this one at you. It's from Randy. Randy says, please break down the percentages how a business should split its income.
Man, we get this kind of question all the time, Chris. And the fact of the matter is people really need to stop. Randy, if you're listening, I understand what you're asking, but if you do all of the things that you need to be doing with your revenue, this becomes a lot less of a concern, because if you're setting back for retained earnings, if you're setting back for your taxes, if you're setting back for future purchases, if you're doing all the things that you just need to do, you're not going to be wondering, what do I do with the rest of this? It's all going to be spoken for. Just like with personal finance, Dave talks about having a name on every dollar. It's not an issue of, here's all my revenue, and now I'm going to make up some percentages as to how to split this up. Just make sure you're doing all the things that you need to do, and that'll be taken care of.
John, I wholeheartedly agree. I have gotten this question a lot as well in my time here, and I tell people, listen, if I give you a percentage, everyone's going to try to go make it fit.
That's right.
That percentage. And you and I know businesses are different.
Yep.
And so instead of getting wrapped up in a percentage, what I want you to do is follow a principle, and that is what you were just alluding to. You got to make sure that you have a budget, that you understand your expenses, the fixed, the variable, that you've got a debt reduction plan. If your business has debt, you need to be reducing the debt. And then the retained earnings is crucial, not only for emergencies, but for future opportunities. So instead of worrying about percentages, focus on principles, follow those steps, and make sure you're doing the right things you can, Randy, for you and your business. And I promise you, remember with the budget, it's a living, breathing thing.
Right.
Everybody wants John to set the budget,
right?
And it's going to be that same thing throughout the year, and that's not realistic.
It's not fire and forget. It's a living document. You're going to have to adjust it every month. You're not going to be good at it at first, but you just got to keep going, refine it, tweak it, and you'll finally get it.
Yeah, and just be aware of what it takes for you to keep your doors open.
Yeah.
That's most important of all.
Yep.
All right, very good. All right, so let's move on to the next one. This one's from Dr. Richard. He's asking us, he says, you discuss businesses saving up about half of their income. How about churches? Now churches, John, is this different?
Well, yes and no. You got some factors that are different, but let's just put a church in the broader category of a nonprofit. And the fact of the matter is that the issue of being a, what is it, 503C?
501(c).
501(c) is a tax issue.
That's right.
Whether you're named or categorized as a nonprofit or a for-profit, you still have to bring more money in than you spend.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if you're nonprofit or not.
Yeah.
That's a tax issue.
That is. It is a classification.
That's right.
For taxes.
That's right. And so you've got to bring the money in.
Absolutely. So here's what I tell you, just like we tell a business. What I want you to do as a church is begin to walk through the process where you can save up 1 month, two, and three, mm-hmm. and eventually up to maybe five or six
yep.
of what it takes for you to operate the church.
That's right. Just keep the doors open.
You have to have awareness of your numbers.
Yep.
There's no guessing. And listen, you set that money aside, and just like in a business, it's called retained earnings.
That's right.
And so you've got it for an emergency fund, or you've got it for opportunities mm-hmm. that come up. But I would tell you this. You got to be careful, John, when I tell them about opportunities.
Okay.
Because, see, people find those things all the time. So what I would do is you got to be able to identify what are we always going to keep here for emergencies.
Right.
For roofing, electrical problems, or whatever,
yep.
and then begin to talk that through. Mm-hmm. But as a church leadership, to be able to talk it out and figure it out together. Don't leave it all on the accountant.
Right.
You know, don't leave it all on the shoulders of one individual. But as a group, we are guiding this nonprofit in a direction.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. So we knocked that one out. We're rolling, dude.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to one of these that we could disagree about.
Well, I'm sure we will. let's look at this one. All right. This one's from William. William says, okay, how do you get through to directs who are oblivious to poor workplace behaviors? All right, now, this guy.
I've got an easy answer for this, Chris.
Do you?
You just talk slower and louder.
John, I don't think it's going to work. All right, listen here. Here's what you do. So if he's got someone that's on his same level,
yeah.
or peer-to-peer, and you're not agreeing on the workplace behaviors,
yeah.
I would say what you need to do is sit down and begin to talk about what are the benefits of workplace behaviors. Because if as leadership you're not on the same page,
yeah.
the team isn't going to be able to follow you.
Right.
So what are the benefits, and then what does it look like, and why do we want it?
Yeah.
All right, so let's take it the other side, because
okay.
maybe I'm reading this wrong. But let's
hard to tell. It's only 140 characters yeah. on Twitter.
Well, it limits us. but let's say he's talking about direct reports.
Okay.
All right, let's yep. say, John, I'm going to pose it to you.
Yep.
So how can he get through to direct reports who are oblivious to poor workplace behaviors?
You know, a lot of times when you bring issues up like this, it just automatically puts people on the defensive. The shields come up. And you get a lot of why and a lot of drama around these issues. So there's a couple things that I suggest you do. Number one is to hit it quick. Don't turn this into an hour long conversation. Hit the behavior very quickly. And Jack Galloway, one of our executive vice presidents, is great about how he addresses these issues. And he will just say, "Hey, my observation." Let's role play this for a second, Chris. He would say to you, "This is just hypothetical now." He would say to you, "You know, Chris, I've noticed in meetings you're doing this. You're checking your phone, let's say, during meetings when other people are talking. And I just want you to know that how I experience that is that you're not paying attention. And that's not good. So I really need you in meetings to be focused on what's being discussed and not be checking your phone. I appreciate your input. You're really valuable to the meeting, but I need you to do that. And I appreciate that. Thanks." And then we're off and going. And we're not going to have some big hand-wringing, long conversation. We're just going to hit it head on. We're going to affirm that you're valuable to the team. And then we're going to address the issue, and we're gonna go from there.
Yeah, I think anytime you know you can bring it direct,
mm-hmm.
And again, keep it in context, their personality style, right?
Right.
We talk about DISC a lot.
Yep.
I train and teach people on that. But if you can take into heart and into mind how they're wired, but let's get to the point and let them know.
Right.
One of the things I found, especially for people that are running young companies out there, or even people that have older companies, when you start to talk about behaviors, one of the things that's most valuable, John, is to show people a behavior
mm-hmm.
and that it's wrong,
mm-hmm.
okay, or a behavior and that it's good.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that on the screen, it starts to help people identify, like coming in late is stealing.
Right. Right.
You disagree with me, John?
No, I don't.
Okay,
I don't,
you gave
no.
me a look.
No.
All right, dude, I'm fired up today.
You know what was happening. I'm having flashbacks to hearing Dave talk to people about that.
And that's the thing. But I think that's one of the things Dave has done is allowed us to be able to identify it, see it, and why it's not what we want.
Right.
And then at the same time, show a good behavior and why we want that.
Yes.
So the more you can do that with people, you have to do what leaders always do, and that's, John, remind.
Yep.
Teach, yep. guide, and repeat, right?
That's right. And I like it when people, and it's most effective if you'll focus on the observable behavior. Like, let's take this instance of somebody being on the phone. If you go into this discussion and say, you know what, whatever you're on the phone about is not as important as what we're talking about, and you start making all these assumptions, then you get into this whole drama thing. But if you just purely say, "I'm observing you
yeah.
show up late. I'm observing you checking your phone during meetings. I'm observing you cutting people off in conversation. I'm observing this, 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 or this, and this is how I experienced this. This is how that impacts the other people on the team. This is, you know, what the outcome of that is. There's no debate.
No, and you don't want to assume.
Right.
And I'll tell you this. One of the mistakes I made as a young leader coming up is I would think things that I should have told people.
Right.
And then I didn't tell them.
Yeah.
And then what would happen is I would get more and more frustrated
right.
and not as patient with that individual.
Right. On anything. On all
anything.
Everything. Right.
Anything. Because I'm holding on to that past frustration.
Right.
So as a leader, I'm going to tell you this. Be honest and communicate with people. Let them know what's going on. Don't leave them to their own devices to, quote unquote, figure it out.
Right.
Because that ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. And what I like to say to people in that situation, Chris, is make sure that those people and those that are demonstrating those behaviors are carrying as much stress about that behavior as you are.
Mm.
And so, you know, you're going to have to raise their stress level a little bit around showing up late to work.
That's exactly right. Let's move on to the next one. Marcy says, what is the best way to coach a young staff, i.e. 19 years of age or younger, without seeming like we're parenting them? This generation acts so entitled that it's hard not to want to speak to them like a parent. Now, Marcy, I'm going to tell you this. The first thing, if I'm in your shoes, that you would really want to do is make sure you sound like you got some resentment. You sound a little frustrated. And I would tell you, be careful of that, and you'd have to put that in check. If not, it's gonna seep through every interaction you have with these younger people. So I would say this. Here's what I would do. I would talk to them like they're adults. Again, I would just tell them, I'm going to teach them what maturity and professionalism looks like. I'm going to begin to show them examples of what it is. But I'm going to also talk to them about why I want them to be professional, really helping them understand the bigger picture. Give them specific examples of what to do and what not to do. And then set up a system to appreciate, acknowledge, and reward the behaviors that you want to see. And John, before I toss it to you, one last thing I would tell anyone that's leading anybody is never forget that time off is just as precious as money. So when you're rewarding people, start to think outside the box. Start to help them understand that you get them. Because I'm going to tell you, if as an older leader, if you're leading younger people, when you start to act like you know much more than them, which you probably do, but if the appearance is that you don't value their opinion and you don't value what they bring to the table, then what you've got is a table full of resentment on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot that goes into this, to be honest with you.
It is.
But I'm going to start out with bringing this up. Truett and Dan Cathy have built a multi-billion dollar chicken sandwich business. Some of you might have heard of it. It's called Chick-fil-A. With a workforce that is largely people under 19 years old. And that massive workforce that they have, they show up to work on time. They tuck their shirts in. And every time I tell them, thank you for my waffle fries, they say, it's my pleasure. So somehow he has built that family has built a phenomenal business on people that are 19 years and younger, and they've got them to understand the importance of those workplace behaviors. So be encouraged that it can be done. This is no excuse for not succeeding. It is something that can be figured out and really leveraged for success in your business. But here's a couple things that I think you need to keep in mind. I understand what you're saying about you don't want to parent them. But at the same time, you're going to have to do a lot of education. You're going to have, like you're saying, Chris, there's going to be a lot of explanation of why things are the way they are. And, you know, Dave talks about this all the time. You're going to have to treat them like adults. Now, what we mean when we say treat people like adults is have direct conversations about expectations. This is what it means to be a professional. I know it's within you to be a professional. This is our expectation, and to do otherwise is unacceptable. So you're not ever going to get away from having these kind of mentoring, coaching conversations. And you know what? There might be times that it feels like parenting because you're talking to a younger person. Don't want you to be condescending.
Right.
Don't want you to be derogatory.
That's right.
But it's life skills.
Well,
you're going to have life skill conversations.
And I'm going to tell you this right now. If you're a parent, you are teaching, guiding, and you have to repeat to your kids.
Yeah.
If you're a leader, John, you're going to have to teach, guide, and repeat to your team.
Yep.
And so there are aspects of that that are very similar.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, as a parent, you have more control over behaviors.
Right.
But as a leader, you don't. Because here's what you have when you're dealing with 19-year-olds and up. They have the power of choice. They
right.
get to choose. They're either going to do what you're asking or they're not.
Right.
Now, if it's a kid, well, you handle that situation, don't you?
That's
I
right.
I mean, I do. I don't know about the Falcons home. Do you handle it, John?
I think you probably know what happens at the Falcons
home. I think you do, too. I'm just messing with you. But listen, but as a leader, what you're going to have to do is to decide,
right.
how are we going to correct these behaviors?
Yep.
And then at the same time, I think one other clear aspect, and I'm thinking back to future former podcasts where we talk to people about this, is with younger people, please make sure you're giving them a voice.
Mm.
Which means an opportunity to be heard.
Yep.
When you do that, people feel valued when you do that.
Yeah.
Because now it's not just you as a dictator telling me as my leader.
Right.
But we're discussing. Now, there are some things that are, you're debating, and there's some things you're stating.
Right.
That's from Mama Hogan. She
yeah.
didn't play.
Okay? Yeah. We're not arguing. I'm just explaining why I'm right.
Okay. Bless your heart. All right, but listen here. But if you get their input, they'll feel valued. And
right.
so sometimes listening and doing that, it'll change things.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marcy, I would tell you this. Just change your outlook and look at it and say, you know what? They are young, but I have an opportunity as a leader to change the trajectory of their life
mm-hmm.
if I can instill certain values and qualities in them, if
yeah.
I can help them.
Yeah.
So, Marcy, I would say look at them and try to help them. Don't be resentful at it anymore. Let that go and say, it's my job to help.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, it's a beautiful thing because as a former 18, 19-year-old, I had people that poured into me
yeah.
that I will never forget
yeah.
because they did change the trajectory of my life because they started to help me understand this is what you have to do if you want to win.
Yeah. You know what I hear underlying what you just said, Chris, is you can't look at people as just a unit of production. You've got to look at them and value them
yes.
as people and invest in them. And that's the best thing you can do to grow your team.
Yeah, because we're all flawed.
That's right.
You know, but at the same time, you have a leader that cares enough about you to speak truth. It can change things.
It can.
You know, it really can. All right, we've got some questions in from our alumni. These are entree leaders that are out there busting it.
Uh-oh. These are going to be the hard ones.
They're going to come after us.
Because they already know the easy answers.
They know the deal. This is from Brian Bosley. Brian says,
hey, Brian.
How should the team deal with transition of leadership within an organization? And he gives us a little background talking about they've been in business for 10 years with several core team members that have been together on the executive level for over 6 years, but they had someone leave. A business partner and a former CEO leave, and it shocked a lot of the lower level team members,
mm-hmm.
people that have been with the company less than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it left them to question what's really happening in the ranks of the executive committee. Now, while it's right for both parties at the partnership level, it's been admittedly difficult to put a good face on this to the team. Any thoughts or insight you could offer would be greatly appreciated. Now, transition is not easy.
Nope.
And Brian, I thank you for your question. Transition's hard. Here's the thing you have to remember. People like and crave stability.
Mm-hmm.
And when the stability boat gets rocked, people start to get nervous. And so I would tell you, I would encourage you more and more to communicate, reassure your team, and then communicate even more. It's hard for people to focus, John, when they're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Nervous people don't perform their best. They just don't. So make sure that the team knows the jobs and the company are all okay. And you're going to have to remind them of this. And again, Brian, I'm going to tell you, you're going to have to tell them and tell them and tell them before they start to believe you. Another point is to make sure that your leadership team is on the same page on how things are being handled. Because when transition occurs, people are ultra sensitive. Everything falls under the microscope. They're watching everything, the conversations, the interactions. And so it's almost like having a sore on your arm. When your skin is raw, it becomes very sensitive. So even a light touch can cause that nerve to flare up and cause pain. So what I would tell you is be very aware, be extremely sensitive, and be very focused on communicating clearly. The more you can do this, and as an executive committee, you all have to present such a unified front now, because everything's under the microscope, that you are going to have to spend time together as an executive committee, talking it out, walking through the process, and making sure everyone's on the same page. Now, John, what anything you'd add to that?
Well, actually, I think you covered it all. I'm just going to say it a little bit different way. I heard you hit everything that needs to be hit there, but let me throw a little bit different light on it. The first thing I would say to you is there is a lot of good research, Brian, that has shown that what is really stressful for people more than change is ambiguity, is not knowing. So, you know, if there's a detour on the way to work, as long as there's good signs and you know how to get around the construction job, it's a change. That's not that stressful to people. But when they don't know what the next step is, when they don't know where the company's going, when there's ambiguity, that's what drives the stress and makes the change seem so difficult. So it's your role to blow all that ambiguity out of the water. You've got to take care of that. And this is what Chris hit on. To do that, over-communicate. Talk about it. Explain what's going on. Don't shy away from it. In a time of uncertainty, this is when leadership has got to step into that. A lot of times the natural thing, Chris, is to pull back. If there's a little bit of uncertainty, you know, leadership can retract sometimes.
And I'm going to tell you, if that happens at this point,
yeah,
you're going to lose good people.
Yeah, that's the worst thing.
Yeah, because I'm going to tell you, if there's limited communication, then now your team has to assume.
That's right.
Okay, and if there's no communication, then they left to have to guess.
And assume the worst.
And they're not going to do that. So I'm going to tell you, Brian, not only for the sake of the team now, but also for the future of your team, that you have got to, like John was saying, really get very clear and detailed on how you're laying this out and dealing with it, because your executive team is going to have to reassure people now more than ever.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I would say to you is do everything that you can and just do this, okay? Honor these people that are leaving by not speaking negatively about them. Not only is that right between you and them, it's also right for your team to see that's how you treat people.
That's a great point. Because no one wants to be talked bad about.
That's right.
Right?
Right.
And if everybody worked for that leader before, all you have to do is say this. This is what I used to tell my team when someone was leaving. Hey, John was leaving. Not you. Let me go with another name. All right. It made you nervous.
You can use my name. It's okay.
Let's say Sally.
Okay,
Sally. Sally was leaving. And hey, you all, as a team, just letting you know, she's moved on to something better for her right now.
Right.
No hard feelings. We're going to miss her, but she's moved on. When you do that, it kind of puts a period at the end of it.
Yeah.
And people now don't have to guess.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But this is a crossroads in your business that your leadership is at a high premium. You've got to step into this. Don't be worried about doing it perfectly. Just be there. Just show up in this situation. And don't be afraid about saying it. Say, hey, we got some transition here, you guys. We're not exactly sure on this, this, and this. We're sure about this, and this is what we're going to do. But know that we're working on it. And let them know.
Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you another thing. I've thought about this a few times as I've talked with people over the years. Whenever a company is going through a transition, it's also a chance to clean house.
That's true.
Okay, so meaning this, if you know you've got a couple negative people, some bad apples, all right, and they just surface every once in a while, but you know they're not bought in.
Right.
At that time, when you're seriously trying to get everybody to unify, to move forward in this new direction, they will just mess up every good thing that you're trying to do.
Right.
So as a leader, if you know this, I would tell you, if you're going through transition and you've got some people that have to have some behaviors address it, hit it head on, and now the team can start to heal properly.
Yep. Deal with it.
Well, I like that. Brian got me riled up. I like him. All right. Here's another one. How do you motivate employees to take their knowledge of their job to the next level and study about their job outside the office? Falcons, I'm going to throw that one to you. So how do you do that? How do you motivate people to work outside of work about their work?
You don't. You've either got a team of people that are motivated and care about what they're doing, or you don't. Now, hear me say this. You can take a group of people that are good, hardworking people, and you can demotivate them. You can ruin the morale of your team, or there's things that you can do to positively improve the morale of your team. But you're not going to fundamentally take somebody that's not a go-getter and turn them into a go-getter. Because like you and I were talking about yesterday, Chris, you just gotta wanna. And if you don't, it's going to be hard to get people to do that. If they're not invested in what's going on, it's not going to happen. So I'm taking a step back from this question and say, as the leader, from this day forward, it's your responsibility to find those people. Find the right people that are motivated people, that are so invested in what they're doing that they'll read after hours and get them on your team.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. A go-getter looks at spending time as an investment.
Right.
Because they're trying to grow themselves.
Right.
And I agree with you. Hiring, you've got to have the right people on board.
Yep.
Because if you've hired people that are working a J-O-B,
yep.
People that are working a J-O-B, they're barely even giving you what you need to as a basic performance
right.
level.
Right.
Now you're wanting and expecting them to go over and above.
Right.
That ain't going to happen.
Nope.
So you need to hire right. But I would also say this. I'd go back and talk indirectly to this leader, and I would say, why? Like, why are you wanting them to spend time outside of their job? Mm-hmm. Like, if it's a person that's a web designer or a programmer, and they've been here for 8-9 hours, and yeah. you want them to go home and continue to do that, well, then we got to revisit the KRA.
Right.
We got to make sure that we're being very clear.
Right.
And so you're not having people guess, but they understand the expectation.
Yep, absolutely. Now, I will say, it sometimes... in certain work situations, if you as a leader have not really been good at rewarding people or putting a system in place where winners can win,
yeah.
it's going to be hard to tell who your really truly motivated people are and who your turkeys are. So you need to make sure that you put a system in place where your winners know they're winning.
John, what does a motivated teammate look like?
A motivated teammate is somebody, when they come to a situation... and they have what Fred Smith, the CEO of FedEx, calls a moment where they can choose discretionary effort.
Mm.
When they know what their you mentioned KRA. For those of you that aren't familiar with that, that's a key results area. That's a performance focused job description.
Yes.
When they realize, you know what, this isn't really a part of my KRA to do this, but they choose to exert that discretionary effort to go that extra mile. That's somebody that is bought in and motivated about what's going on.
That's good.
Because nobody's there, right?
Yeah,
nobody's
right.
there poking them in the back to say move forward.
Right.
So the deal is you've got to make sure that you have created an environment where people like that are recognized, where people like that are rewarded. Because that as the leader, that's what you can do. So Chris and I have done a real good job about beating you up, about hiring the right people. But now you've got your current situation. So what you need to do today is begin to structure your compensation, your appreciation, your recognition, all those things with your team in such a fashion that the people that go the extra mile, the people that demonstrate that they're motivated, are visibly rewarded.
Absolutely, because I'm going to tell you this. When people see something and it becomes visibly appreciated,
mm-hmm.
it's now going to become duplicated.
That's right.
People are going to do that because they're like, well, I want that same recognition that Susan got. What was she doing? Oh, she did X, Y, and Z.
Right.
So get very clear.
Right.
Don't do that. Don't just assume that people are doing their job and them doing their job is reward enough. As a leader, you're failing if you're doing that.
Yep.
You need to make sure you're giving them verbal appreciation mm-hmm. as well as just whatever little things you can do to get them connected and moving forward.
And whatever works for them. Like you mentioned
That's
before,
good.
Chris, you help people with DISC all over the country. And you know, right, there's some people that aren't going to really value the same kinds of recognition.
Absolutely.
You know, a handwritten note or a gift card for them and their wife to go out, or husband to go out to dinner, might really do something for one person, whereas, you know, maybe a high I wants to stand up there in front of the meeting with your arm around her shoulder and have everybody, you know, get to see that they did a great job. So
That's
make
right.
sure that you're speaking their language.
And I'm going to tell you, the more you do that, you're going to look like a rock star to that teammate.
Yeah.
And so take the time to identify their personality style and then reward them and recognize them based on how they're wired. It makes them feel like you know them on a deep level.
Absolutely.
And John, we're walking along the side of hiring right, and you were talking about making sure that you have a process of appreciating people. But
mm-hmm.
but what does that look like? How do you know what your team wants?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the best things you can do is just listen to them. Just listen to the things that they appreciate. Pay attention to how they compliment other people. Watch how they give recognition
That's
to their teammates.
Yes. I would tell you this, like you said, listen. I would put one step before that. If you really want to know, ask them.
Yeah.
I mean, the team member profile sheet that I put together, it was of just a sheet where people told me their favorite candy bar, their favorite restaurant, you know, what they like to do.
Right.
And so it was one of those. It was like a cheat sheet for me as a leader.
Yeah.
But it made me look like a rock star.
Right.
And so I like that. Listen and ask them. And then here's the thing. If you get that information, leaders out there, and don't do anything with it, then you've just wasted time.
Right.
So once you get the information, start to use it and use it for good.
Yep.
All right, I got this one. Is there a good time management book or program that employees can read or take to increase work efficiency and prioritize effectively? Yeah, you're looking for a magic pill, ain't they? Question. Yeah. They are, aren't they?
Yep.
I'm going to tell you this. I think one of the best things as a leader that you could do if you're trying to help your team increase productivity and efficiency is teaching them how to work smart. People are not aware of just how much time gets wasted daily and weekly. If you're looking for a book, one of the good ones out there that I've really enjoyed and we've talked about a lot is a book by Todd Duncan called Time Traps. That can help. But for me, years ago, I honestly threw out the term time management.
Mm.
Falcons, I threw it away.
Well, what have you been doing ever since?
All right, here's what I got.
Okay.
Instead of time management, check this one out. Time ownership.
I love it.
Now, because see, we manage stuff that's someone else's.
Yeah.
Right? All right. But when you own your time, that means it better not go anywhere without your permission.
Mm.
So what I want you to do is to take ownership of your day so you can also take ownership of your results. So you sit down on a schedule. I'm going to tell you, any leader that's out there, if you've got a team, they need to have a structure to their day. You need to know exactly. They need to aim their effort. If they're salespeople, then they need to know. They need to be on the phone from 9 till noon. And go to lunch from noon to 1. They come back and do some little paperwork here and there, but we're back on the phone from 2 to 5.
Mm.
I mean, when you do stuff like that, it helps everyone channel their energy, and they know what to do. So teach your team how to be effective and efficient, and remember this. And then, John, I'm going to throw it to you, but remember this one thing. Remember, being busy does not necessarily mean you are being productive. And so help your team not be busy. Help your team to be extremely, extremely productive.
Yeah, and that takes intentionality. So, you know, to put that into Dave Ramsey lingo, tell your day what you're going to do with it instead of your day telling you what it's going to do with you. Because if you don't design your day ahead of time, just like what you just said, if you don't intentionally design your day or week ahead of time, and there's got to be margin because things come up, your day, your week will absolutely get away from you. And here's the last thing I'll say, Chris. We can waste a lot of time looking for a great time management system. So pick a plan, pick an approach, and do it. Because I think it was Vince Lombardi that said, an imperfect plan that is violently executed is better than the perfect plan that's never executed.
Yes.
So don't waste a bunch of time looking for the perfect time management approach. Pick one and do it consistently.
Yes, absolutely. Help your team help themselves.
Yep.
And the more they understand that, the more they can start to guide their effort. Now, these are some questions that came from our Entree Leadership discussion boards.
Okay.
This
over
one.
Over at EntreeLeadership.com.
EntreeLeadership.com.
Got it.
It's where leaders happen.
That's it.
All right. I like that. All right. This one is talking about something that I think a lot of small business owners out there would deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is having that line established between leader versus friend.
Okay.
This one is from Scott. It says, I have a team member who is an overachiever. He's always good at what he does and likes to complete tasks ahead of schedule. The problem I face is that he acts like I'm his best buddy. For example, I came into the office this morning, and before I even sat down, he asked, how was your meeting yesterday? Anything that you want me to do? Once I sat down, he peered over the top of my monitors to ask if the meeting meant we were going to be busy, etc. I've explained about personal space, but it seems to go unheeded. Any suggestions on here?
So, Chris, you know, the thing to keep in mind is, well, first of all, let me just say this. I get the question a lot. Is it okay to be friends with my team members? And first of all, I like to say that's the wrong question because, yes, you need to. I mean, how long do we all spend together at work? You better be able to, at some level, be friends with these people,
absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
The real question here is should I hold my friends at work accountable to performance? And the answer to that is yes, or we're not going to get anything done. So this is a little bit different issue because it's a personal behavior thing. It's not a performance thing. So accountability might not be the exact word, but you got issues about personal space or just behaviors at the work. yeah, you should be able to be friends with this guy, but he needs to be able to understand personal space. So if you've said it before, you just need to turn the heat up on that conversation a little bit.
Well, and I'm going to tell you this, John. A lot of times, as I've talked to people, people have said, Chris, I've told them. Now, in my mind, you know me as a high D.
Right.
When I tell someone something, I'm pretty sure I've told them.
I've never really left a conversation or a meeting with you, Chris, where I thought to myself, I wonder what Chris meant.
Seriously. But here's the deal. As a leader, what I want you to do is, as John said, turn up the heat. Get more direct. If you have to, when you're coming in, let this individual know, hey, listen, I'm going to give you the information as I give it to the team.
Yeah.
You know, this is an overachiever. So you like the person. Yeah. They're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Give them some guidance.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Sit down.
Get away from my computer.
Get away from my computer.
But I mean,
it's going to end up there, Chris. If he doesn't pick up, you know, here's what I hear about this person is their social skills are not what they need to be.
That's
and
exactly
so you've
right.
got to mentor and coach this person around social skills. So, you know, we do all the stuff that we talk about for other things. Start with the why, explain it gently, coach him around it. But if he doesn't pick up on the fact that it's not okay to, you know, peer over the top of your monitors while you're sitting there trying to do something, you're eventually going to have to look the guy in the eye and say, sit down.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to talk here in a second.
Now, and I would tell you this, as much as you definitely want to be friends with the people that you're working with, I would be careful of this other word that they use in here that Scott used, and that's buddy.
Buddy.
Because a buddy is a college buddy, a church buddy. That's somebody you hang out with outside of work a lot. And
yeah.
So I would caution you that, you know, we're not letting the lines of the relationship get blurred. It's good to hang out and go to dinner and maybe even have families together.
Mm-hmm.
But on the work side of things, there are levels.
Yeah.
There are some lines, some boundaries,
yeah.
so to speak, that Dr. Cloud would talk about. And I think it's important to have those established. If you get those lines blurred, then you're being unfair to this individual because he doesn't know any better.
We see this all the time in family business, don't we?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
When you're at work, you've got to have your work hat on. And when you're at home, you got to have your home hat on. And maybe it's your buddy hat. And if you guys are buddies from college or whatever, that's fine. Go do what you want to do. Go play on the softball team or whatever it is and have fun. But when you're at the office, you got to be professionals, which includes personal space.
Yes. All right, everyone, we are getting low on time. We got a lot of questions in, and I promise you we're going to do this more. But I wanted to get to this question. This one comes in from David, and he says, sales and traffic have dropped dramatically from last year to this year. He's in a mall location. He's not made any money thus far. They're behind about $7,000. They're looking at extending the lease, which would cost another $5,000, to stay in this mall. And then he asks, people just aren't coming to the mall. Just about every other tenant is in the same boat. In fact, 13 stores are currently out of business. Help. And John, I hear this and my heart goes out
yeah.
to this individual.
Yeah, this is tough.
Because this is a tough spot.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, we have got to look through this through the lens as an entree leader.
Mm-hmm.
We have got to get proactive,
mm-hmm.
not reactive. And we can't have the victim mentality.
Nope.
Now, that just isn't going to work. An entree leader knows I've got to look at this thing. I got to be a go-getter, John.
Yep.
I got to shift it and start to look at this because you know the definition of insanity.
Right.
If I keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to help this guy, John? What would you tell him?
Well, I'm just going to echo what you said. This is a tough situation, okay? Nothing easy about this. And the only thing that is going to get a person out of this situation, David, going to get you out of this situation, is a whole bunch of hard work.
Yes, sir.
I mean, we're talking about like a second job. We're talking about whatever it takes. I understand the situation in the mall. People aren't coming to the mall. Foot traffic is down. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, every detail of this, but it sounds like you could get a break if you did an extended lease deal. But I got to be honest with you. I don't want to see you tie into any more time on a lease than what you've got now, because that's just going to make the problem worse. You know, if people aren't coming today, they're probably not going to be coming tomorrow unless something happens differently with malls. And that's not what we're seeing across the country.
No, not at all.
So I'm looking the other direction. What can I do to get out? You know, if I gave the mall 10 grand, could I get out today? I'm not saying that's the thing that you need to do, but the decision was made to sign this lease, and now it needs to be honored. And whatever has to be done to honor that lease and get out of there and go find something, a way to do business that doesn't have this constraint to it, because this is an anchor around your neck.
It really is. And I'm going to tell you this. There have been a lot of people that I've worked with over the years that have been able to communicate about a lease scenario and walk it through. But just remember, and please hear what John was just telling you, re-upping and signing for a longer period of time is not the cure. Mm-mm. What that will do is it's called a temporary Band-Aid.
Yeah.
But it's not going to help you in the long run.
Right.
So to get different, we've got to do different.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to sit down, especially with your spouse, begin to look at this and lay it out and say, what are our options here? If people aren't coming to the mall, where are they? Mm-hmm. And so you have to start to look at your online presence and what are you doing to help take this business to new heights. But we can't just sit. Now, I tell you, this is a tough spot. Mm-hmm. But the only way you're going to get out of it is by working. And so start to work, start to move forward, and look at your options, begin to bust it, and get serious about approaching the market differently, and start to use your networking circles, the business development opportunities, the people that you know. Because you don't tell what your product or service is, but I need to get back to doing what it takes, the things that you were probably doing before you came into this mall.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get in a mall, John, and they think that that's just going to be the saving grace,
right?
Because people come.
Right.
Well, people need to know what your product or service does. How does it improve the quality of people's lives?
Absolutely. And the other thing is, Chris, even though, you know, I'll say this to you, David, I know that it seems like it's a lot of money. But Chris, you and I both know that $7,000 is an obstacle that can be overcome.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
And now we're not just immediately suggesting that you give up on your dream of being a business owner. We're not saying that you need to quit. But if it means you've got to start delivering pizza at night to help generate the income to pay off this $7,000 and get out there and get yourself in a better situation, then we are saying there isn't anything that's, you know, legal, ethical, and moral that you shouldn't consider doing to generate this income. It's time to get gazelle intense.
Well, and that's the deal. I mean, intensity's got to get shifted up. Effort has got to be made. Sacrifice has got to be made all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you, here's the thing. When this person turns this around, notice I said when, not if, because I think the right people with the right information and the right effort can do anything.
Absolutely.
But when they turn it around, it's going to be an incredible growth opportunity for them as a business person.
Yep.
Because now you start to look at it and say, I can never get to a moment of cruise control in my business.
Right.
I have got to keep my hand on the wheels and my feet on the pedals so I can take this business where I want it to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, David says here in his question, I can't put myself and my family through another year of hell. And you know what? I would say, I know this is just a soundbite, but it's so true. Winston Churchill said, if you find yourself in hell, keep going. And so if the fear, the stress, the anxiety of this situation causes you to shut down, it's only going to make it worse, David. And my heart goes out for you, but my encouragement to you is just what Chris said. Keep your foot on the pedal. Take whatever steps you've got to personally. You know, sit down with your spouse and say, here's our situation and here's what we're going to have to do. And it's going to be all hands on deck. But you can do it. You can do it.
Listen, everyone, thank you for taking the time to join us. John Felkins, thank you, my friend, for popping in and giving us your expertise.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I love it.
Absolutely. Now, listen, what else you got going on over there at EntreeLeadership.com?
Well, I know somebody, you know, you said something about the discussion boards, and I brought up EntreeLeadership.com, and that's where it's all going on. So, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, make sure you're coming over there to Entree. We've got new stuff on there all the time. We put out daily coaching tips and content, and of course, we've got our online coaching program, all access there. We want to help you. We want to see you win. And so make sure that you are utilizing all the tools at your disposal. And EntreeLeadership.com is one of the big ones.
Fantastic. Thank you for taking the time to join us. You all, thank you for sending your questions in from Twitter, from Facebook, from the Entree Leadership discussion boards. We are going to do this again. Well, listen, stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff. Keep learning and keep leading. And until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, and grow your profits.